What I'd like to address is the interpretation of some data, of some suggestions on how to analyze or how to interpret variety trial data. And I think this can be applicable to other types of trials or work, as well as just variety information. This particular LSU fan is holding a pretty long rattlesnake that he killed himself, and this picture illustrates what we've got with variety data that are out there now. With all the seed companies and the number of available varieties there, that the development in the seed industry has gone very quickly in the last few years, so there's no lack of data to be found. And it can take a lot of different forms. These variety trials, you go from your traditional OVTs, those are replicated small plot trials. We have replicated large plot trials. The guys in Texas have a good program with that. Strip trials, demos, y'all seen those. Module size plots have gained a lot of popularity in recent years. Entire fields and testimonials. You think about where the variety information comes from. A lot of times it comes from the coffee shop or the co-op. All of these have attributes, and they also have some negatives that can be associated with them. But when you look at how most variety trial data are presented, there are a few things that I want to point out. The first is this number here, this LSD. That's the least significant difference. Statistically, a difference less than the LSD cannot reliably be said to be repeatable and be an actual difference. Differences greater than the LSD, you can pretty confidently say that that's going to be a real difference, and that can go for link yield or any of these other fiber quality parameters that we have there. Staple length is generally reported in inches instead of 30 seconds of an inch, just due to the way that our small or relatively small samples are measured with HVI machines. These staple lengths are usually longer than what you'll find in a commercial production situation, and that's fine. 1.22 inches, I think just about all of these are going to be really 36 or above staple. If you apply them to a loan chart, they would be in the premium range for the most part. However, the key thing when you look at variety trial data are the relative differences among varieties, not necessarily and always the absolute numbers, but the relative differences. You take an example like uniformity index. Uniformity index here, this length uniformity index is very high. It would be unusual to see a bale recap sheet with these kind of numbers. But again, you're looking at the relative difference, and that's what we need to stress, is the relative difference. Now, when you see a lot of variety trial data, sometimes it's replicated data, sometimes it's not. And I think one thing that we oftentimes overlook is the mean or the average of the test here. It's for the average of link yield in this trial is 1,176 pounds. Particularly with non-replicated data, the mean of the trial I find very useful, because what we generally are looking for are the outliers. What are those outliers on the highest end? Because you can take a lot of variety trial data and they're normally distributed. Basically, it's a normal distribution of yields. This is from the 2006 LSU Ag Center OVTs, and across that horizontal axis, I've got them grouped into categories of how many observations were either above or below the mean of the trial. And they're grouped into 25 pound increments, and the number of observations there on the vertical axis. And as you can see, it's a normal distribution. But what you're looking for is those varieties that fall out on the right-hand side of that curve. Those are the ones that are more than likely going to reliably be able to be said to be higher yielding than the rest. And of course, there's a lot, the group on the left-hand side of the curve, you want to avoid those, but it's a normal distribution. So if you consider how a variety performs relative to the mean of the trial, I think oftentimes you can identify some higher performers even in non-replicated data. So what is exactly a statistical difference? Well, there's always going to be a difference between two numbers. The question is that difference real? Is it repeatable? Is it actual? Or is it just due to chance? Did Saturn and June line up in the right place and one variety out-yielded another? Well, replication hopefully reduces the chances of calling something a difference when it's really not so. You look at a p-value, a lot of times the LSD will be reported at a 0.05 or a 0.10 value. That basically, if it's a 0.05, it means that we're 95% confident that that difference is real. If it's 0.10, that's a 90% confidence interval. We need to consider how data are presented. What are the comparisons that are being made? What are some of the methods? A lot of times, what's the scale on the graph? When we graphically present data, sometimes it gets kind of easy to alter the scale and make things look like differences that may not be. And I want to show you some real data. This data comes out of Tennessee before Chris Main came on the job there. Their previous cotton specialist, who won't be named here, did some work with X2G2BT. And you see here he's got four locations. The difference in X, this experimental, compared to a check, three out of the four, we've got a positive yield response. Look down in the fine print down on the lower left-hand side. The p-value is 0.47. Statistically, it means these data don't mean anything. But if we can play around with them a little bit, let me show you what they look like graphically. The orange bar is the experimental. The white bar is the check. When you look at it this way, things look pretty positive for this experimental. Three out of four locations, and including when you look at an average, we've got a positive yield response. But look at the scale on the graph. It goes from 950 pounds up to 1,400 pounds. So if I take that scale and I go from zero to 1,600 pounds, the differences don't look quite as real now. So you can take a lot of data sets and you can play around with them and sometimes show differences that really aren't there. So I want to tell you a little bit about X2G2BT. As I said, there's always a difference between two numbers. Well, if we split fields in half, one side of the field, it's always going to yield more than the other side of the field. I guarantee it. So with this particular piece of research in Tennessee, basically these guys went out and the flag ferry came along and put down a flag in the middle of the field or somewhere close to it. The left-hand side is the experimental. Right-hand side is the check. This is not a different variety. It's not a different product. In fact, the stands for experimental too good to be true. Basically, nothing was imposed here other than the flag got laid down and one side of the field was measured next to the other side of the field. Consider the methods. So why do we replicate? If you look at a fairly typical field here with four different soil types, and I made this up, but it can be, this is not an uncommon situation. Have four different soil types there from back to front. If we were to take this and module size plots have gained a lot of popularity in recent years, if we were to divide it into three parts and have variety A, B, and C, I hope you can see that there are some problems here with this kind of a variety trial. Variety C, for example, on the right-hand side, basically is going to be grown in soil type D and C and a little bit in B. But the effect of soil type A you're not replicating across the variation in the field here. And so a lot of the differences may just be simply due to the soil type and not necessarily due to the variety. So why do we replicate? If I ask people to answer that question, most people would say to account for variation. But there's another very important reason why we replicate trials, and that's to help determine if the results are going to be repeatable. It's to account for the variation, but to confirm that the results are going to be repeatable. A better scenario in this type of a field would be even if we had two replications and take those same three varieties, variety A, B, and C, long, narrow plots tend to work very well. For one thing, we can go across as much of the variation in that field, but the plot-to-plot variation is minimized as much as possible with these long, narrow plots. And I've come to, in doing some of these large plot trials with 8 or 16 row plots, I think they're very valuable compared with the larger plots. Another factor is we all have expectations when we look at data. We've had varieties that we've had success with in the past, and I know that there's a tendency for me, and I think Roger would agree with me, there's a tendency to look at a set of data and you look immediately for the treatment that you think is probably going to be the best treatment there and see how it did first. So we come at data a lot of times with preconceived notions. If you take variety trial data and you took the names of the varieties away and just called it A, B, C, D, E here, a good question to ask yourself is, would I choose the same variety, or would I evaluate these data the same if I didn't know ahead of time what the name of the variety was? And I think in some cases we could say yes, in other cases we could probably say no. If you apply the variety names there, if I had good success with Delta Pine 164 in the past, I might look at this set of data and see it second from the bottom and think, well, I just don't know if I believe that or not. Well, the data's still there. It says what it says. You got to remember your preconceived notions. And this last factor I want to point on is, it maybe it's my own windmill to tilt at a little bit, but it's when we report loan values. And I've been guilty of this myself. Virtually no replicated variety trial data is moduled. Very little of it is ginned commercially. It's impossible to defoliate each variety perfectly in a trial, so some varieties are going to have more leaf than others whenever we harvest them. So the handling of the harvested seed cotton in the ginning process, that greatly affects things like color and leaf. Dr. Boylan alluded to this. And so coupled with the staple length, this alters the price, the loan price on the loan chart considerably. And it's my opinion that when we look at loan values and gross dollars per acre, number one, I think the data are very little use to begin with, but I think they're even less useful unless color and leaf are remain constant. For example, if a footnote in a table says that it's a 41.4 is going to be assumed for all of the samples, a base color and leaf grade, and we're only considering the physical fiber properties, well, I guess that has some validity. But the problem is the ginning process with these high uniformity indexes, almost everything is going to have a premium. And the real differences in the discounts are going to be due to color and leaf, and as long as we don't have a micronear discount. So a lot of these data that report loan values and gross dollars per acre, in my opinion, can be misleading. I'd rather stick to the lint per acre, the yield, and understand that we can manage them in a real-world situation as best as possible in order to maximize and preserve quality. So to sum up, we need to take a critical look when evaluating data, and we need to remember also that researchers, extension specialists, and this includes me, dealers, salesmen, consultants, anybody in the industry, one thing that we often do is we try to interpolate too much into a single data set or into a single piece of data. And the key is to take and consider the entire body of evidence or the entire body of knowledge there that's possible in order to make some sound decisions. And with that, Roger, that concludes my comments on this.
We have a few minutes for a discussion. If anyone has any questions that they'd like answered with regard to variety selection from any of our speakers. Okay, I've got one, and this pertains to both of you gentlemen and perhaps our consultant as well. Many of these states or the academic institutions and extension services are no longer making variety recommendations. They're just reporting variety performance. Can you go into the positives and negatives of that?
Well, I can tell you the positive. I've never done it. So that's the states I've been in, we've never been involved with making variety recommendations. I think it's kind of like Sandy said, we let the data speak for itself. There's different aspects that you can put together. And basically, if I'm saying this is my recommended variety, it's saying this is recommended for all situations. And my data is limited for that. So I think I'm extrapolating beyond my data points. It also just simply sets up a stage, and I think most of them are set that they have to be at a certain percentage of the variety test for so many in the tops, so many in so many years. So I just think the fluctuation from year to year. I'd much rather report data than let the specialists and let you as consultants take the data and make the recommendation.
I think Dr. Boylan hit the nail on the head with the, I think it's best to let the data speak for themselves. It's difficult to make a variety recommendation for Louisiana. That's just one state. It's difficult to make a variety recommendation for Franklin Parish, where Mr. Ray farms, because we've got so many, we've got at least two really distinct different soil types. And so blanket variety recommendations don't tend to work well. And then the other thing is, what data are we going to recommend off of? Is it going to be just small plot OVT work, or is it going to account for some other data sets? And that reinforces the, I think, the concept of using as many data points as possible. Yeah, Frank's comments can pertain to variety trials that have been harvested with yield monitors, and Frank and Bill Robertson have published some data on that. And if you want to come Friday morning, I think I've got a paper to address this very thing too. So we just didn't have time to address all of that, but it gets back to the methods by which a trial is conducted.
Do we have any other comments, questions? Yes, sir.
Maturity identification in cotton is very transient, and it's we do not have real good data because it varies how it's handled, the test situation. So we certainly don't have the maturity groups you have in other crops. We publish a percent open bowls as an indicator of maturity, but that is somewhat artificial in its nature. We have done some other things, but it just takes too much time. I always tell people that the Delta Pines plant mapping, what they do with one, what y'all have done with plant mapping, probably identifies maturity better than what we do in our state variety test, because we just don't address that. So to answer your question, I don't know where you get it, because I don't think the data are out there real well.
Any other questions? We've got time for one more. Yes, sir.
What about the fraction of a variety? Do you recommend that for a farm? What proportion? Two varieties, three varieties? At the old extension, a few years ago, was 60-30-10.
Yeah.
60 of the best, 30 of the one different, 10% new ones. What would you
recommend? Yeah, I think Stanley kind of alluded to that some, but it's a different world with the transgenics. Back when everything was the same, all were conventional, and they only had about four or five varieties, it was real easy to say 60, 30, 40. I don't have a set percent. I would, and it's according to the variability you have on your farm in terms of that, I would spread it out as much as I felt comfortable, but you don't want to dip too deep. Do you have some percentages? Extension likes these percentages better than...
Yeah. 60, 30, 10 sounds as good as any, you know. I think the thing is I would like to see somebody grow three or four varieties. I think you get more than that, you probably begin to lose money more than you really want to. To me, the key is in a lot of respects, is spread and maturity. 60, 30, 10, the 10% might be a variety you're very interested in. You want, you know, first year out of the gate, let's take a good look at it. The 30%, and I'll use Louisiana, for example, where 555 has been so successful. It's a full season variety. There's no doubt about it. 60% would be planted to that, and then the other 30%, I think, to spread risk, would probably go to an earlier mature variety or something that's different, and then that last 10% to a brand new one.
There is one situation where you should just plant one variety. Several years ago, I was in a production meeting, and gave all this variety test data and comparing varieties, and the head of farmer raised his hand. He says, you know, I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to go to find 20 or 50. And so I went through some explanation of the difference and everything. And he said, I still don't know which one to grow. And I said, well, you know, they're sister varieties, so it doesn't make a lot of difference. And he caught me afterwards, kept struggling. I said, well, just plant them both. And he said, well, I can't do that. And I said, why not? He said, I only got 20 acres. I'm going to just buy one bag of seed. So sometimes you do just plant one.
Please join me in thanking our three speakers in this section.